well. Another day, another tape. Yeah, probably faint, yeah. All right. So, what we're talking about then is something that's very complex. It can be looked at in various ways. If you look at it in a purely mathematical or scientific or material way, you see this as an experiment, and you see it in a mechanism. But if you're looking at this in a spiritual way, where there is the unfolding of meaning within the spirit, it is seen as a myth or as a story or something like that. And that the moral of the story, when you live through it, just like you live through a drama, if you're an actor in a drama, when you live through it, you begin to realize what this part means and what the whole drama means. So that's what we're doing. Now, both the story view of our psychology or of the evolutionary creation, both the story view and the mechanical view are both true, and they complement each other. The only way that it, or only reason that it seems so very far out and not the same reality at all is because we are limited in our consciousness. And some people are more literary types and they like stories. Some people like pictures and some people like machines. It's the limitations that are incorrect. It's not the creation, which itself is quite total. Now, it is said that the universal spirit is threefold. That is, it has three attributes of ways that it accomplishes things. And when it accomplishes things through these three attributes, each one of them has a different viewpoint or a different activity. Now, the third attribute of the universal spirit is what differentiates the points or differentiates the atoms right from the beginning. The first and second attributes, which are the divine masculine and the divine feminine, the spiritual father and the spiritual mother, they work together so well, and they're so integrated that it's hard telling whether the will is informing the imagination or whether the imagination is drawing out the will. But they have different qualities on the deepest level of the universal spirit. The first attribute, the masculine attribute, is called the attribute of power, whereas the second attribute is called the attribute of word. If you want a detailed explanation of this, you can look at the Rosicrucian Cosmo Conception, and even that is very scant, but it's a little bit more detailed. The simplest way that we can look at them is figuratively. And that figurative quality is probably pretty close to reality. If we think of the will as an infinite, not an infinite, as an innumerable number of straight lines radiating every direction in all the dimensions from all sources at the same time, that is what the spiritual masculine is like. What happens is that the spiritual feminine wraps itself around the spiritual masculine. Meaning to say that in all of these rays, there are fields that are wrapped around around their center. If we take a cross section, so like this is a ray, not a very good one, but if we take but you have to remember that this is infinitely dense. And if you take this and you take a cross-section of it, it looks like this. It looks like the word. And since they both are cotaneous and both occur at the same moment, the vibration of the word works on all the differential atoms through which the will of the first is manifesting. That's a fairly simple That's the simplest way I think it can be stated. Now, you've got to be careful of images like this because our images are only three-dimensional, and this is two-dimensional on a two-dimensional drawing of something that's three-dimensional, when the reality is much, much more than that. When Rod talks about being able to look at vector spaces in Eddie, and the two of them can see it in their mind, I'm just in awe of something like that. That's a different kind of imagination that I have. But at any rate, we're looking at this in the simplest way possible, and there's always the possibility of illusion. Because the Rosicrucian philosophy, the seers who have formed the Rosicrucian philosophy find that the rays go in different dimensions, and that the difference of the word is what produces in these atoms different worlds, different cosmic levels of existence. Whether it's the world of thought or whether it's even something beyond the world of God in our solar system, it is that different dimensional radiations and imaginative wrapping around that produces different worlds. You can see it. We have similar things that take place in the changing of our seasons. Only here we see it in a very delineated way. We see the Earth tilted on its axis going around the sun so that the sun strikes more in the southern hemisphere when it's winter here and more in the northern hemisphere when it's summertime, when we're on this side of the sun. That would be like summertime. But if we look in slow motion and take any one given constant sunbeam and describe it on the Earth, it would be like this. That's what this graph is here. It is the graph of the position of the sun relative to the equator through the four seasons. Now, even though this is only just an image, it happens to be a very good image. It is an image that is used throughout physics and all of the sciences that depend on physics. It's called the right-hand rule. That is to say, the way it's stated in physics, if you have a wire and there is a stream of energy going through that wire, just assume for a second that it's a straight wire. When there's energy going through that stream, a field forms itself at right angles to that. Now, the atoms themselves are particles that are going in their own little orbits, and as they pass through those orbits, they have fields. So when we're looking at this stuff, solid as it is really fields. The parts that are particulate, that are something that you could, you know, rub in your fingers if you had small enough fingers, is very little. Most of the cosmos is fields. You can walk right through it. And some of these fields are very, very rare. We're only familiar with the fields that have to do with gravitation and all of the things of the etheric and chemical subdivisions in the physical world. Some of the fields are much rarer than that. So this is a principle that works on a... But at any rate, everything that we do in science and technology uses this right-hand principle. Now, this is a very important principle that runs throughout the cosmos. This is how the cosmos is built. It is built through a manifestation of the right-hand rule. Now, what we're talking about is we're saying that at right angles to the vector of energy is where the field is. And what is the right angle? It is nothing but the square. And for this reason, the square has always been called the aspect of construction or destruction, but basically construction. Everything is built using the principle of the square. The part of astrology that's most important to us is when we have trials, have tests or something like like that, we build character through the square. And that what we're trying to get at today is the feeling in the lunation cycle of what the squares are like. And if we have that fundamental quality of the feeling of the square, we can understand better how to work with it, or even to recognize it. Now, in ancient times, the square was considered the figure of justice, because the rigor of justice was just like the rigor of the square. And that holds true in our language right until now. We say that when somebody is an honest or a just person in trade interactions, we say they are a square dealer. Or we say, are you being right with me? If there is a contest and one contestant beats the other, they said, you defeated me fair and square. Meaning to say that this is a real test. We even say that since the square is an aspect of conflict, as we're going to see in a little bit, we even say that when two people are struggling with each other, they're squared off with each other. In the boxing ring to this day, which is a horrid sport, the boxing ring to this day is called the squared circle. It is where you find which of the two people, who is the victor, who is decisively the person that is better than the other. If we do things right, and if a person is too much concerned with rightness, we say that person is a square, meaning to say that with someone who is in the square attitude, you can be so square, you can be so right that you're sort of a fuss budget. There have been times I've been named that. Now, if we're looking at the late lunation cycle on the astrological mandala, we're saying that the... let's put a little diagram up here. We could almost leave it up here, but it's kind of messy for other people. We're saying that at the new moon is the second conjunction before it, and as it's coming out, it's the first conjunction, and the second, first sextile is here. Second sextile is here, and here are the squares. And here are the trines. We're saying that the first square, if we superimpose the cosmic mandala, the lunation cycle right on the cosmic mandala, we say that the first square is like the square between the first house and Aries cusp and the fourth house and Cancer cusp. That is the cosmic first square. And we can see right away it is like a fire and water struggle. The fire is a very dramatic element. The water is a very soothing, cooling. It doesn't want things, like Cancer especially, it doesn't want things too distinct. It would just as soon have things in a biological slurry, sort of like the womb is. And it doesn't want things too definite. It's all right if things are born out of it, but so this struggle between fire and water, between the dramatic and the subtle, is what the first square is like. In the lunation cycle, we see that there are two squares, and the second one is like the cusp of the 10th house in Capricorn. Now, at either of these two squares, it's very obvious that you are at the quarter moon or at the three-quarter moon, because you can't tell when the moon is one-third covered with light. But it's fairly easy to look up there at night and say, wow, it's exactly in half. The same thing here. If it's two-thirds 2/3 light at the first trine. It's very, very hard to estimate that. It's not an easy estimation to make at all. So the square is sort of a blatant kind of aspect. It's there, it's dramatic, it's a stumbling block, it stands right in front of you unless you can learn to get work through it. So the square represents matter and the constructive process in matter, as we've just seen in the last few minutes. Now, that process is a process of resistance. That's a very unusual idea, but it is an idea that we can see in life. The first and second squares are two ways of looking at resistance. Now, the resistance in the cosmic mandala and in creation and cosmic root substance is such that it is the highest degree of resistance possible, which means no resistance. Now, this is a principle you can see all the time. It's much easier to carry somebody who's stiff than it is to carry somebody who's limp. And cosmic root substance is so subtle that to hold it into something like the mineral kingdom requires an enormous assertion of will. What we're living in is an enormous concentration of will to bring it all the way down to the level of this stuff so that it can be made solid. But it is this experience of resistance that is the value of this world. It blocks us. We can't just walk through this wall. There were times when I was, you know, twice in life I've walked into lampposts, being a dreamer and off in another world. And this world let me know that it was here, because you walk into a lamppost, it's quite a thing. But you get the whole idea. So it is a resistance by resisting nothing, for having no resistance, and it requires constant will. The square is like that. If you have a square in your consciousness, it is not something that you can set aside. You might be able to do that with a trine or a sextile or even a conjunction, but a square, it's always there. You might say that since a square seen internally, the square seen internally is a cross, and the constancy of the square is the cross that we have to bear. And it is that we have to work through. So the construction of matter, that the relation of construction that is from the first square, is the resistance of holding two things, holding the infinitely subtle force into existence. And that's the way the resistance works, and that's the way it's built. Now, the difference between the two squares is that the first square is called a positive limit square. A positive limit square. Meaning to say that as far as you can put your will, that far it will go. Not that there's a limit from outside. The positive limit square is an internal limit. The only thing that is a limit is the limitation within yourself. Now, there are places in the world where we have special positive limit places. The Bonneville Salt Flats in Utah is just such a place. They take cars and other vehicles and they put them on the Bonneville Salt Flat and they go as fast as they can go. It isn't like there's anything holding them back. There are no restraints of any kind, but you go as fast as you can go. The machine will go no faster. That is a positive limit. It is positively a statement of what you are capable of. Now, the second square is a negative limit square. You know, everything, when you're building something, this is as far as you can go. You might say that this world right now, over all the millions of years as it has existed and will exist as it is right now, is the limit of how deep the concentration of will of God is to hold this in existence. God gives everything that it has. It goes all out, and it takes things as far as they can be taken, and that is a positive limit. However, when you get to the other side, when you get to the second square, it's like Capricorn. You're taking things apart now, and things have been fixed. Most of the history of the cycle, it's three-quarters done. And so things are brittle, and there are limitations. And so a negative limit square is when, if you take it any further, everything goes broke. I have a friend who spent quite a bit of time in several automobiles learning about second squares. They were his mother's automobiles. He would find an interesting curve, a banked curve, and he knew, he had a very good sense of mechanics, he knew where you had to take that curve to get through the fastest. And he knew what the automobile was capable of. And he knew all of the limits of that curve. But he was not, he looked at a limit as an enemy. And he was always somebody, I'm convinced that because of his life, he's no longer with us. He died about age 40. And he never, I think, from the age he was 10,